With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Capita. Capita's software solution seeks to automate the equity management process for startups, including workflows around cap tables, ESOPs, due diligence, and transactions. Sign up at Capita.com to get started with your digital cap table, ESOP, award granting, and all things equity. Free for companies with under 25 stakeholders. Also powered by Limitless Connect. Limitless Connect can provide digital CX solutions. The teams of Limitless Connect have years of CX experience, which equip them as the driving contact centers in the future. Sign up for a free consultation with Limitless Connect at www.limitlesscx.com. With Limitless Connect by your side, anything is possible. And brought to you by GoTime Bank. GoTime Bank is owned by the Gokongwei Group, the same companies that brought you brands you love like Cebu Pacific and many more. GoTime Bank makes next-level banking a breeze with its convenient account opening process. It takes less than 5 minutes to get started via the free app. Plus, get your GoTime Bank Visa card at one of their kiosks for free. Download the GoTime Bank app today and experience the next level of banking. You may visit www.gotime.com.ph for more details.
For me, it was always being consistent. Idealism through being consistent. If you commit that to me, make sure that you deliver something like that. And being consistent. That yes, you can take your pauses in between. That's fine. There's no problem in that. But you have to be consistent. Wherein, if you're needed, you should be there, you should show up, and you should deliver. Those are the things that I really hold very dear to me.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast. And again, this is another back-to-back episode that Mr. Paul Pageman Paho has endorsed to me. So the last one was another Paul Suliman. And again, you don't say no to Pageman. That's basically the moral lesson of the thing. Paul Paho says, you should interview this guy. I will interview that guy because, again, there's a person that I respect. There's only a few out there. It's Paul. So again, shout out to Pageman for this recommendation. But without further ado, let's welcome to the show, Mr. Eman Navalan of Tetris. Woo! Woo! Eman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, pleasure to be here.
There's a lot of things that I want to unpack today because, again, there's Tetrix, there's Viridian Technologies, and there's Pitaka. I'm a little confused, and later on, we will be shedding some light because I'm not sure what you guys are building, but I'm pretty sure, again, you guys are doing some amazing shit just because possible. I was in it. That's it. So without further ado, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Emin, what's your hustle?
Well, yeah, I'm just building passion projects in Web3. So that's really my kind of a hustle, creating solutions that are really going to change lives, especially a legacy for me and my family and for the kids to remember.
Yeah. There you go. What an amazing answer. Such very presidential. Okay, so 2028, you know who to freaking
no.
Vote for. President Eman Navalan. All right. But that's a great thing. It's a little vague, but I want to go deep down. Why Web3? I mean, there's a lot of people that are trying to do Web3, blockchain. I don't know what the fuck it's called now. It's been there for a while. But I want to understand how you got there. But before how you got there, I need you to buckle up real quick. Because before you started doing Web3, I need to unearth first how you started hustling. So I need you to buckle up real quick. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Oh, huh? There you go. All right. So obviously, I am biased towards my fellow Tomasians, right? I'm a Tomasian, bro. That's what it is.
Amazing.
Yep. High school and college. Go stay. There you go. The Pitan, Pinobal, Lacson, and España, and all the other freaking shit. I 8 years of my life. And I always flex this. So obviously, you won't be able to see it. If you're a Tomasian, I have the Arch of the Centuries on my desk every single day. To remind me of my roots, proud of Tomasian, and I always do that. But before you became a Tomasian, I want to understand first the origin story. What was it like growing up, and who were your very first role models in hustling? I want to understand the origin story before you even started. What are the earliest hustles you remember doing?
Yeah, well, when I was still studying, or growing up, rather, my parents used to be OFWs, so
where did they work?
Left here in Oman, Middle East.
Oman. My uncle used to work in Oman as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, he was but it's in the medical system. But again, they always say that Oman, he always says that it's a great country, but not a lot of things have changed in Oman. It still looks and feels the same.
Yes.
From what it was. Okay, so what's it like having both parents work in overseas to provide for the family?
Yeah, well, I was born there. That's first.
Oh, you did? So, okay, perfect.
Yeah, I was born there. And I grew up and studied there until I was grade 6.
What?
Okay. And then, since the curriculum is there, different there, no? They asked me to do my high school studies here in the Philippines. So I would learn Filipino. And I would also change my accent from British to actual American English.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Wow.
I have all of those weird accents. When I was growing up, I was trying to mimic Indians and Europeans and so on, because I was really studying there with them. And yeah, well, growing up, I was left with my grandmother and a few aunts, right? And they really helped me understand that life is really about adjusting.
Yes.
So it was a really big adjustment for me because I was really with my family for the longest time when I started. And being in high school, it's really, there's this very big gap, and I feel there's this culture shock in me that it's really totally different.
Right.
Right. So my Filipino was really not that good. Mm. I don't even know how to write.
Whoa.
So you did you
write Arabic back then?
I was taught the basics.
Wow.
Yeah, it was part of the curriculum there. Mm-hmm. But here, I just wrote whatever, you know, I feel writing. Like, this could be the spelling for this word and whatnot. So
yeah, yeah.
So that's
shukran.
How my life.
Shukran, yeah. Shukran po. There you go.
Yeah, shukran. Yeah. Well, that was an experience. That was a big adjustment for me. And I think that really shaped me in terms of, you know, adjusting to different circumstances. And that really paved a huge way for me to actually grow doing what I do now. But my inspiration at the time was really my parents. My mom taking care of the family there, of course, aside from my dad really working hard. Because in the Middle East, it's really different.
How different?
We know that it's a desert, you know?
Yep.
And if you're working there, you tend to drive 100 kilometers just to work and go back. Ooh. Just for a few hours. And move to another place that's 100 kilometers again out of the city and go back. And it's desert.
Yeah.
There are mountains, yes, but there are really no people to help you out once anything happens there. So it's really an environment where it's a bit secluded. But at the same time, everything was there. Everything was cheap.
And it's easy, not easy. I've gotten a chance to go to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia last year when there was a podcast conference. I was talking to Arabs and Saudis. 95% of them didn't speak English. So, oh my God. And being a Filipino, I was being labeled as, oy, kabayan, kabayan. Because most of the Filipinos there are, again, of OFWs, right? So,
yeah.
Why is this freaking Filipino all of a sudden talking about podcasting? So, it's weird. But it really just show how different. I had a freaking culture shock. Not a culture shock. It's more like, man, the desert is different. It's dry. So, us here, we're used to having hot, but it's humid. You get sweaty a lot.
Yeah.
There, it's not. It's hot, but you don't sweat.
Sweat, yeah. That's true.
Oh, my God. What? I didn't know how to process that. And then at night, it's so dry that, cool. You know, I wake up in the middle of the night and I need to drink because I'm thirsty as hell. And then for some weird reason, every morning, my nose would bleed. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine that's in a nice, fancy hotel that I was in. Imagine the hustle that you're going to have to go through driving hundreds of kilometers in an arid desert to make ends meet. Dude, I have nothing but respect for those people that work, especially the OFWs in the Middle East. It is fucking hard. What were those things, aside from them working hard, that are instilled to you today?
Well, honestly, it's totally different when you become an OFW or you experience life of families of OFWs who have lived there. Mm-hmm. Because there's really this, I would say, it's like their family there.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally different. Because when you go back to the Philippines, you know, parang you don't even know them anymore. That's how you feel, you know. It's totally different because there it's really all the bayanihan happens there.
Correct.
Everybody helps each other because they know that they have to rely on each other. They have to protect each other. They have to be there for each other because everybody's really working hard for their families and loved ones. And I appreciated that. And I wanted that same type of culture in everything that I do.
Nice.
I felt that need for that because it's easier that way, right? Mm-hmm. People helping each other. Everything's light, simple, easy, and whatnot. But it really changed when I was here. It's like, you have to live your life on your own. And it's a bit westernized.
Mm.
And people tend to focus on material things rather than, you know, relationships.
Right.
And it was really different.
I want to jump into your ability to adapt. So again, coming from Middle Eastern upbringing all the way to grade school, and you're going to have to do this. I went through a similar process, but it's very localized. I came from a non-traditional school. We didn't have uniforms. There's only 3 subjects a day. And then I go to UST for high school. Fucking culture shock. All of a sudden, all the subjects are a day. I have to wear uniform and you have to stand up. Little things like that. But in hindsight, I was able to adapt because every year that I went through it, and up until college, I had different classmates. So I knew how to adapt. Until now, that's a superpower I developed there. I remember I never became a class president until college, but they always gave me the freaking title of PRO, public relations officer, because I'm always Mr. Chundi. I have friends in other sections and all that, which technically I still do now. Some random people now that I just and ended up turning now into a podcast, I get to build that connection. But I was doing this since high school, but I only was able to develop it because I learned to adapt very early in my life. How did you adapt when all of a sudden you're uprooted from what you got used to and now you have to thrive and figure it out on your own, especially with not having your parents around, but just your lola and your titos and titas?
I just made sure that I made friends anyways. That's the first thing you do. In any place that you go, if you know you're going there alone, first thing you do is make friends.
How right? did you make friends? What was your MO?
It was really like approaching people. That's one. Mm. When you approach people, because don't expect them to approach you anyways.
Like, yes.
They have their own thing going around. Yeah. You wanted to adopt. You want to understand what's happening, right? So you have to do the first move anyway. So it was really that. I'm a shy person. I'm not really the person who goes around, "Hey, how are you doing?"
That's me.
I'm not
Hi.
That type of guy.
What's up? Yeah. There you go.
But growing up here, I developed that. Mm. And I think it was during college that I was able to do the same. And in fact, I also became the class president.
There you go.
My first year. Your first year.
Oh, you did. Me, third year.
My first year.
I was still an idiot in my first year. So
it was yeah, but I was an idiot back then. Mm. It was really just another adjustment, right? From junior school. I was not commuting at the time because my parents would like, "You don't know how to cross traffic lanes okay. and you don't know how to cross the roads."
And all of a sudden, you get thrust into UST and nobody fucking not commutes. Everybody commutes in UST.
Yes. And in fact, another problem there was a flooding.
Yep, you learn
like
how to
you
swim.
You have to find your way home. You have to find your way home.
What was your route? What was your route?
What I do is...
Where did you live at that point before?
It was Antipolo.
Oh my God. So I had to go to LRT2,
LRT Legarda. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So if I know it's raining, nauna na ako muwi. I'm going to go home.
No,
but there are times
up.
That I couldn't.
Yeah, you have to go to España, take either a jeep or a tricycle or all that freaking balik-balik route, right? And then you have to go all the way to Legarda because that's your only way. Or else, you have to take the jeep. And that's worse.
Yes.
Because you're going to be competing with every other student that goes to that place. And, yeah. Oh my God, not funny. Okay, so now UST, obviously, I'm hella biased because I'm at the Mashin through and through, high school and college, 8 years of my life. Who I am now was forged in UST. What did college life teach you? Because you studied civil engineering?
Yeah.
Okay, too many dudes there. Not enough girls. You have to go to Eduk to look at the girls. Too many.
It's a
sausage party in the engineering building.
Yeah, you have CTHM at the side with Eduk.
Yeah, I know. But inside your building, just too many dudes. 80-20, easy. And the 20% aren't the hottest girls either, too. So what was that like, studying in UST College of Engineering?
It was great because there's this some kind of culture with engineering students. There's something that's going on, like when they go outside, like when we go outside, rather, when we go have our lunch, we go in packs. You see us going like in groups, right?
Yeah.
Like in other colleges.
At least
colleges,
a group of five. Minimum.
Yes, minimum. And they're loud. You know, we're loud. We're just enjoying because we know that when we get back to the office, the school rather, it's a total different, you know, scenario. You just be quiet there and listen. And,
no, you know what's that excitement? Study. Seeing other women. Because you don't get
that's
to
one,
see them
that's
out
one.
There.
And you're all
in
guys
the
anyway.
There you go. Oh my God.
That's another thing. Yeah. But that's true.
It's true, man. I got friends everywhere. Right? I got friends in Ang. I got friends in the weirdos in CPAD. I got friends in the main building. Right? Even in IPA, I have freaking friends there too. So,
that's amazing. But what may I ask you? Like, what was your course back then?
I was commerce. Entrepreneurship. Tapunan. Okay, so
No, you're in the pita. Ang ganda ng place na yon. Like,
I know.
It's easy to
I was a smoker back then. There's a lot of hot girls in AV and in commerce. So I got my fair share. Okay? And you guys are just a lot of scarcity in terms of women. So you can...
It was all sausage, you know, even our chairs.
Yeah.
Everything was drawn like sausages.
Okay, before this becomes a UST podcast, I want to understand now, after graduating, now, first of all, you took civil engineering, so there's a board exam. What was that hustle of a civil engineering student?
Well, first and foremost, when you get to our major years, third year, fourth year, and fifth year, it was really a totally different environment. And in fact, I'm not that bright in my first and second years, and even the third year, because I was not really focusing on studying at that time. I was really just enjoying playing Dota, going around, going around with friends. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were times where with my group during Valentine's, we go around, play our ukulele, sing to those girls out there. Even go to different, we even went to different school buildings and, you know, just gate trash some of the classrooms and ask people if you could sing for them. We weren't even talented. Like we had a guy who knows how to play ukulele.
Just had the guts.
The guts, yeah. Okay. It was an experience with my friends that I actually treasured because it really allowed me to be more vocal, right? And during that time when I was doing my major in years, I was really forced to becoming more adaptive to circumstances that are, you know, that are fast or instantaneous. Like, flood. There's flood. Do something. Go home. How do you do it? Right? There's an exam. You have to get this grade. How do you do it? Like that. It was really like very fast. You have to pivot here, pivot there. Do your stuff here. Do your stuff there. It was really just different. And during the majoring years, it was actually that's when I realized the importance of being a civil engineer. But most people don't understand this, and they tend to forget that, you know, when you compare civil engineering to other engineering, or I would say other professions, you actually have to make sure that you do the right job. Because let's compare this to a scenario we're in. It's someone's fatality na lang, no? Right? We talk about the fatality.
Yeah, we're talking about hundreds of lives.
Yeah. We compare the work of a doctor. Nothing to say that doctors are not good or not, just comparing the magnitude of the responsibility for a structure, if the structure fails, even though you're 100 engineers, you would kill that much number of people.
Yeah.
We can't even count.
Yep.
And the damages are really high compared to a doctor. So that's what really struck me, that I have to take my profession seriously, right? So it also allowed me to understand that in anything that I do, I have to give my best.
Got it. All right. So now you turned that switch to being, understood the magnitude of what you're trying to build. Now, walk me through college, the boards, and what was the first few jobs you took? And how did you then channel all of the skills that you've been able to do? So obviously the skill stack, you're already makapalang mukha, so that's good, right? That's a very good skill stack because that's also the baseline of my skill stack here, right? But what are the other skills that you developed over time after college?
Yeah, so after college, when I was studying, the first thing that happened that's very vital to me was my dad's passing after my graduation.
Oh, no. I'm sorry about this.
Yeah. So it really inspired me to do good in the board exams. So I really studied, you know, focused on that. Like it was laser focus on passing the board exam because I really need to work. Because some of my siblings are still studying and I felt the need for me to step up as someone who already graduated, right? My mom didn't even pressure me. Nobody did, right? But it's really just me doing my thing because I feel responsible. So it really changed from me being carefree to something like that instantaneously again. So during the process of doing my studies for the board exam, my review, 3 days before the exam, it was the November exam, I was admitted to hospital. It was painful. Yeah. So these are, you know, the little challenges that really
for what?
Me. For dengue.
Oh my God.
So this is hard.
Holy shit.
So if you're diagnosed with dengue, you cannot go.
No. So how did you do
it? Have to stay in hospital. I wasn't able to even take the exam.
You had to wait again.
So I had to wait for the next exam that was due in May. I was really prepared for that exam. So it was really hard for me at the time. I really processed that feeling. You know, that why wasn't it given to me? Why was I able to take the exam and whatnot, right? Mm. So for 3 months after that, I didn't study.
Okay.
Funny thing is, I was really confident
that,
you know, even if it's me, I can do it. But then 2 months before the exam, when I was trying to compute again, using my calculator, practicing the speed and whatnot, it became hard because, you know,
holy
for
shit.
3 months, I stopped
yeah,
really
you're dormant.
Computing with a calculator. Mm. So it really, I was really slow compared to how I used to be when I was preparing for the November exam. So 2 months isn't enough to recall everything because we had like 3 different subjects.
Right.
One's math, everything math. So it's like summarize everything from algebra to the end.
That's a note for me. That's on you, yeah, bro. But that's crazy. Where I draw the line. Okay.
Yeah, and then we have these physics and talk about studying about water and earth. And yeah, that's another one. So that's like, again, another topic and another thing to do. And third is, of course, the usual, like designing and stuff, right? And that's hard because as you see civil engineering, it really is about different verticals, right? You can focus on water, you can focus on earth or on soil.
Yep.
Right. You can focus on designing, you can focus on surveying, means roads, designing what. So those are different professions and you're trying to study all of the basics.
Yep.
So what I learned there was really to simplify things, right? Because there was a way for engineers to derive formulas from basic formulas. So it's like, you have these big formulas, but it came from this small formula. So you can do it if you understand how it works.
Got it.
So that's when I also started to go deep into understanding the nitty-gritty. And this is very important when we talk about, you know, how I came here to the blockchain space. Yeah. Because I became very detailed as a person. Like, oh, this is how it should be. These are the things that I need to know. So these were the basis of this formula. And now I understand why it's needed and why it's actually being used.
Something
like that. And how can I use this in other forms?
But how did you work on the speed? Just because it's great. You went zoomed in all the way to the bottom and understand the etymology of every single thing. But you still need the reps to become speed. And walk us through, what's the ending? Did you get it the first try? Did you have to try again? What was that like?
It was amazing. For 2 months, I was inside my room.
Okay.
Just going out to eat, do my exercise, and go back again. Mm-hmm. And my wall was full of formulas. And I was just memorizing wall per wall. Yeah.
Okay.
It's how we do it. Like all the formulas in the wall. On one side, it's all math. The other side, it's all this.
Like a mad scientist room.
Yeah, because there are formulas that you need to memorize. And there are some that you can derive. So you have to memorize all the basic ones. Make sure that you know it. Anytime you need it, it's going to come out. Mm. Right. So as I even sleep, I had it all recorded. So I recorded me saying all of these formulas, and as I sleep, it's in here. It's in
like
my
like your own podcast, talking to yourself.
Precisely, precisely, and it was on replay every day for the next 2 months.
Holy shit! Wow, that's amazing.
And then I started, you know, practicing again and again, doing the same problem and again, and trying to also improvise. Like, what if this was asked? After this question, what if this was asked? This was asked. So I continued really exploring different questions or methods of doing solutions and so on. So good thing is, going to the exams, I was confident. And in fact, while I was doing the exam, while everybody is panicking, I was just chilling. Laying around, chilling. And during the last day, it's for 2 days. So the last day, it was the most difficult one. The design, while I was doing it, I felt that I was really slow.
Oh.
Because in our exam, I think it was our batch we're in, initially the board exam would be 30 questions.
Okay.
First scope, that's going to, those are 3 scopes. And you'd answer it for like 3-4 hours.
Okay.
Right. But it became 100 questions on our batch.
What? Oh my God.
So it's like, that's
overkill. Much. All right.
Yeah. Questions were a bit simpler, but if you're wrong on the first one, you'll definitely be wrong in the next series of questions because those are series of questions.
Right.
Right. So I slowed down a bit during the end. And towards the end, that was the only part of the exam where I really took all of the time and finished the exam at the same time that we were about to end it. Yeah.
Clutch. But, you came up clutch.
Yeah. But there were questions there that I had to skip. Like, oh, it looks like this one. It looks like this one. Mm. And when the exam results came out, I was really confident. Like, I will surely pass it. I mean, I was looking for jobs, you know, after the exam.
Already, okay.
Jobs already. So that, not being cocky, but you'd feel that. Like, you'd be
you know your chances.
You know. Yeah.
And in the end, How was the result?
When the results came out, I was this close to being top 10.
Wow, congratulations.
So again, I felt that I didn't do my best. Because initially, if I had done my work, I would have been there. So it was, again, a reminder to do my best in every time. So I was like, oh, shucks, that should have been me. So yeah, cut the story short, after a few months, I did my first job.
All right, now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will now talk about what happened on your first job and how you built your career in civil engineering. And how did you go from buildings or civil engineering to engineering the blockchain when you created Viridian Technologies and all the products that you guys create? But let's talk about that more after the break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Eman Navalan. Right. Told us how he almost became top 10 in civil engineering. What year was this when this happened?
It was 2013.
Wow. That's also the same year I was struggling as hell. Yeah, but I also got to get funded for the first time ever for my first startup in justice.ph. I was broke with the whole 2012 and 2011. No, 2012. That was just a whole year being broke and half of 2013. But okay, I want to understand now from your point of view. So you're already confident, but the board exams is literally just to get your license. The real battle is after. Where did you first end up? And what were the things that you learned during those stints?
Yeah, so my plan, I had a plan after that. I wanted to be in a position or in a job wherein I can accelerate my growth. Because I had to catch up, like I had to do this.
Okay.
There was that push within me, that I really needed to work harder. And my reason is really, you know, what if I try to go overseas like my father? Again, going back, because father was an OFW, I'd like to look into, you know, doing the same thing also. But when I was looking for a job, there are a lot of opportunities out there. But funny thing is, I'd like to be in the position where it's going to be, I would say you need a lot of experience before you get there.
Okay.
So I took in project management or construction management company. So a management company. While I was being interviewed, I didn't care about the salary, honestly. It was really about accelerating my growth.
Got it.
There's this fuel in me because of all of that's happened in the year before.
Yeah.
That really fueled me to do my best.
And is that a path that's typical? Because I want to understand, from a civil engineering point of view, what are the typical paths there where fresh grads or freshly passed board civil engineers typically go to? And how different was the project management path that you took?
Well, initially, people would first assess themselves. If they're good at designing, they'd go to a consultancy firm.
Okay.
That's immediate. Or if they love to see what's happening, they love the thrill of building, they'd go to being a contractor or joining a contracting firm or a construction firm. And those who really understands the scene already or has a background accelerates their growth in construction management, because in construction management, you don't only see your field as a civil engineer.
Okay.
You actually get to meet the different trades, architecture, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and whatnot. So because you're managing all of these construction, so you get to understand what they really do, not deep dive, not to the level of being a contractor.
Right.
Or being a design consultant, but you'll get everything.
Yeah.
You'll get to see what they're doing. You'll get to know and understand how they do it. At the same time, you'll get to see how it's being designed, the rationale behind it, and so on. So you'll get the experience of understanding it. Of course, you still have to do the work.
Hence the growth that you wanted, because this allows you to be exposed to all of these things. And how they cross what are the cross functionalities? And again, you didn't care about the pay. Is it correct? Because I've been hearing this. People always have this notion. Oh my God, my son is already an engineer. Somebody puts a fucking tarpaulin on top of the thing. That board passer, engineer, whatever. And people think they get paid like fucking crazy right away.
That's right.
But I heard the pay is shit though at the first few years. Right. So what was that like? But how did you compensate it with the growth that you then got that you also wanted?
Yeah, first thing that people must understand is if you graduate, if you pass the board exam, you don't have the experience. Because construction, or I would say civil engineering, or any type of engineering, really, for you to get there, you really need to be experienced.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I didn't care initially about the salary, because I really wanted to accelerate my growth so I could get the salary
that you want
after. That I wanted, or even go abroad, because I have the credentials. Like, oh, I did construction management. So he knows a bit of this and that, right? So that's true. Like the salary is not really high because you don't know anything.
Yeah.
You go there learning, understanding. So they're actually providing all of those assets to you. You just have to be there to show up and really understand and appreciate the process, because that's what I guess most of the younger generation now doesn't really understand.
Yeah,
that you have to undergo that tedious process of understanding what you really do in order to say that you're an expert in something.
Totally.
Everybody's an expert now. You should appreciate it. Like many people say, I'm an expert here, there. But no one is. No one ever will be.
Yep. And at the end of the day, it requires time. And repetition and a lot of pain in between for you to even come close to being an expert. You can't be an expert all of a sudden and then tell the world, I'm an expert, blah, blah, if you just base it off of TikTok or you just base it off of YouTube and whatnot. Because a lot of experts actually don't just know the top level of how things are doing it. Most of the time, a real expert is someone who's actually built it time and again, failed and put in the work and hours to get it done. So, okay, when you're now got into the civil engineering thing and you did construction management, what was then the reward that you got over the X amount of years that or months that you did that basically rewarded that accelerated growth that you were looking for?
At first, I was, of course, since I was new, I was just going around. And after a series of, you know, really just hustling and working hard, you'll feel the appreciation. Like it's coming from different people. Like, you're doing good, you're doing good. I wish that I was as good as you are before, or I was as eager as you are before. Most of the time, because during those years when I was studying, it was really different. Your family appreciates you. Like most of the time, yes, of course, but not a lot of people around you really appreciates what you do, because everybody's like students, right? And they don't know how it feels. The teachers would appreciate you, that's for one, but that's a different story. But here, your peers are appreciating you.
Yes.
And they're acknowledging you now that you're doing good. And they even help you in the process of learning. So for me, it was really an experience that shaped me again and made me adopt and of course made me even humble. Yes. Because at first, during that time, it was a different me. I was idealistic, say,
as like you should, most when people you're young, do. You should you should always cling to that idealism. And as you go older, honestly, that's what people lose in their life. Because again, life is hard and all these things, they lower the bar. You should still keep it and mix it with realism. But ideally, that ambition should always stay there, despite the type of bullshit that life throws at you. So when you said you were idealistic, can you describe that further? Were you too idealistic over your views and what it should be and where you should be at a certain time? What do you mean by that?
Well, it comes in two forms. Some people call it bookish.
Okay.
Like it's all standards. You do just standard stuff. But for me, it was always being consistent. Idealism through being consistent. Because if you're not consistent at that time, or you're not even doing it correctly, and you continue the process of, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, you'd be stuck. So it's for me, it was really being consistent. Like, if you commit to me that you're going to deliver this and that, make sure that you deliver. Because if you're not consistent in this, I'm sure I cannot really be sure that you can deliver the next few items. So, or the next few things that we are, or activities that we're about to do. So managing the whole civil engineering side or just structure side back then, and making sure that everything is working together, everyone is, you're managing people, you're managing contractors, you're at the end of the day, one trade could affect the other trade because you're working on the same structure. So it's really chaotic. And if somebody is not doing their job, everybody gets affected and the owner would end up paying more for the structure because, you know, it's more time, pay for more labor,
man hours
and whatnot. So that really shaped my character, wherein the bar is really high in terms of expectation.
Nice.
And expectation in terms of commitments that I bring until now. Like if you commit that to me, make sure that you deliver something like that.
Got it.
And being consistent. That yes, you can take your pauses in between. That's fine. There's no problem in that. But you have to be consistent wherein if you're needed, you should be there. You should show up and you should deliver. Those are the things that I really hold very dear to me.
Okay. So after this stint working as a construction manager, project manager at this point, did you have any other stints before you? Because the one thing that the first comes in, if I go through your LinkedIn, is you're a co-owner right away. Was there any other stints that you built before you took your first plunge as co-owner of Aldimus Construct?
So again, there was a story behind it. Like what happened was, while I was doing my construction management, I'm not the construction manager there. I was an engineer there, part of the construction management team. Mm-hmm. So I saw that if you're really good and there are things that you want polished and are accomplished, construction would be cheaper and stuff like that. Like that's me being idealistic again. Mm-hmm. But we can do it, can actually accomplish it. It's just that, you know, we have to work together.
Yeah.
Right? Like something like that. And collaboration for construction, I would say, goes way back. Because you need each and everyone, even the workers, even the helpers, even the security guards, even the nurses, even the doctors inside. You need each and every one of them. And that's also one of the key things that, you know, made me feel that we need to collaborate as a whole, as a country. But yeah, after that, I got sick because I was working too hard. I was stressed. And at the time, it was not really me being patient. I was impatient because I was, again, going back idealistic. And the culture in construction is purumura. So it's like, it's our
love period. Language.
It's our language. It's like, you know, how we do it in college.
Yep.
Right? And it was something that was really a thing. Because if you're not loud, you're not saying those foul words, in a way you're not respected. Yeah. So something like that. So you need to be heard, of course. Mm-hmm. And you were young, so you had to prove yourself. A lot of things. So all of those pressure build up and I got sick. And I took a pause from working to analyze it again and process it again. Mm. So I had these pauses wherein I was able to understand, all right, maybe being an OFW is not really for me. Got because it. If I'm sick, I was diagnosed with hypertension. It was not good. Mm. So I couldn't take care of myself. It's going to carry on and be harder for me and so on and so forth. Mm. And flashes of, you know, what happened to my father came to me and it was not really good. Yeah, anxiety was there. It's not something that you'd like to be in situation, like very young. Mm. So I took another job. It's a government naman. Mm. Just to test it out. Light naman. I mean, like, let me try this environment. Okay. Let it be light. Mm-hmm. Lighter than what it used to be. And when I was there, I tried to do my thing, but it's really not for me because it was laid back and a bit. I'm not saying it's easy,
yeah.
Because there are tons of work, like paperwork, a lot of paperwork. But for me, there was nothing really sparking my creativity in doing what I love to do, innovating and trying to adapt into new problems, new situations, and whatnot. So it was a repetition. It was a repetition in the in, day out. So after that, I decided to, you know, why not try do this? I was inspired about Megawide at that time.
Megawide.
Wow. Because they started very young.
Right.
And I also heard stories about different contractors that started very young. In fact, one of the stories there was Megawide. They don't have prior experience. They just started it pure.
Wow.
No, so the guts and they were even beyond what I was thinking or what I was able to do. So it inspired me to build a company together with friends in high school. Mm. No, to build a company and try it out.
Got it.
So we were able to create big projects.
This is Aldemus already.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I didn't even imagine that I would be part of. And wow. I would take that as an experience. And there's this sense of gratitude for me in allowing me to extend my knowledge, to further enhance myself.
Got it.
Because initially we were doing buildings and then different projects came in, industrial naman. So I was like,
wow.
Another thing to overcome. Yeah. So different things na naman, I had to do it all again. And now I'm at the top. Right. Because prior to that, I was being offered to be a construction manager already at a very young age, at 1 year experience. So I was not really prepared for it.
Right.
Because for me, it was really the responsibility there is really high. And you really needed to make sure that everything is smooth. Everything as much as possible should be smooth.
Yep.
But that doesn't happen, right?
Nope.
Sometimes people die. Sometimes things happen inside the site. People get injured, right? Get amputated and whatnot. So the responsibility for me, I feel like, you know, if I didn't do my job well and something happens, I would have explained, it would have been heavy on me because, you know, their families would be left, you know, fatherless, or I would say missing one person in their family. So I took the responsibility of, because that was open during the time that we created the company, that opportunity came in. In fact, we had other projects.
Yep.
It was a learning curve also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that gave us an opportunity to further enhance our skills. And I took on the responsibility and we were able to create a few projects that were really good, and big, be part of innovative projects that are industrial. And I was able to meet a lot of businessmen and big people during that time. And it was really humbling because I then learned from them that they themselves are hustling until now.
Yeah. It never stops. Crazy. It just gets bigger.
Yes.
Yep.
And the problems just get bigger.
More complex.
I mean, the more money, the more problems.
More money, more problems.
The bigger,
man, that's what
the, bigger the bigger the company, the bigger the problems. Yeah.
Okay. So and what were the struggles then at that point, from your point, Eman? Because, all right, again, you came from, this young, promising construction manager. You did government, easy peasy lemon squeezy for you. And now you're if not the head guy, you're part of that. And that responsibility is big, but there's other stuff you probably didn't know that existed at that level. They're like, oh, what is this? What is going on? That's all of a sudden there's business stuff. It's a totally different thing because obviously this is going to be your crash course into doing Viridian. But what were the struggles you had to then overcome at this level? Because it's not just all about creating construct. There's the business side of this. Plus, you are now working with higher stake individuals.
Yeah. At that time, we had to face our lowest lows. Again, for any business, when you start, you would have to do everything just to have your first, just to get your first project or first contract, meaning really showcasing that you're capable, showcasing that you're ready, exerting more time. So I had to do all of those things. And you have to be the one doing everything. I learned about accounting. I learned about business processing. Register your business to SEC, do the mayor's permit by yourself, right, with your team, and get the BIR documents done and so on and so forth. So you had to do all of those things. And it was hard, yes, but it was easier because you had people around you that are willing to adapt as well. Like everybody was really hungry to make this a success.
Yeah.
So we really helped each other out. So I would say even the government experience was really something that's good because I was really able to understand that. And most people say that the government is so idle. Mm. In fact, they're not. Mm. But it's just that the work is repetitive because they had to. If they hadn't, we wouldn't have these projects.
Yep.
Like you have to have people do the same thing again and again because it's needed, because you have to process a lot of documentations and whatnot.
Right.
So I had to, again, that experience of the patience in doing that allowed me to do all of these documentations here now.
Yeah.
Processing all of this and going back and forth. Oh, kulang ka neto. You're missing this document. You have to go back there and get back to us after a few hours.
Right.
So I do that every day. So it took me 2 months to do the documents.
Oof.
That takes, a regular, somebody who knows it. Or does it really takes just a month, right? Or even less. So it took me 2 months and it was really hard at that time. And aside from that, you had to do your accounting. You had to understand about VAT, the different taxes and the filing and whatnot. So
shit nobody wants to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So at that time, we weren't even capable of, sustaining ourselves.
Wow. That's so crazy.
And the painful reality of being a contractor is that initially, you would have to rely on the money that you've saved and the people around you, if they are willing to help you. It's like the same thing doing startups, right? So it's actually a startup also, but it's more traditional. But it's the same thing. You have your angel investors or family, or I would say you ask them for loans, ask them for favors and whatnot. So they really help us a lot. Like our families, our friends were able to help us and we were able to grow in very fast again.
Yep.
And the opportunity that was given to us was being, again, going back, parang na-train lang ako, construction management.
Yep.
We were hoping that we become contractors. Yes, now it's ours.
And now my million-dollar question here, Emin, before we take our last break, is that, dude, you're doing well. And this was right in your lane from 2016 to 2021. Where did the career change all of a sudden happen? How did we become from construction management to construction, contractor, whatever? How did blockchain all of a sudden come into your life?
Yeah, so during the time that I was working, so in order to be sane, I play games.
Ah.
I'm a
gamer. Is it Axie?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I didn't. I had Axie, but I didn't really play that much. I just
what got you into the blockchain phenomena?
So it was back 2016. So I was playing. People around, hey, what's Bitcoin? Stuff like that. Okay. It's down. It's cheap. They're free. You get money out of this. You earn profits, X amount of money. And I said, why not try it out? Like I have a few hundred thousand. And just put it there. And funny thing is, I place it at my friend's.
What?
Under my friend's name.
Okay.
A friend, in a way.
Okay.
That I knew was doing all of those Bitcoin thing.
Oh no.
And then a few months later, it was, you know, they were part of a scam.
Oh my God.
I was scammed, man. I was scammed. And we all were. That was the
shit.
If you recall, that was really big during 2016.
Yeah.
And it was actually used for other purposes. Like they were betting futures or I can't remember.
Eesh.
But that was my first stint in blockchain Web3. So it was like it was not that good. It's really not that good.
Mm.
So since I was really okay and doing well naman in construction, I didn't really thought about it that much. Mm. I just gave the money and then realized that I shouldn't be doing that.
Yep.
So after I was scammed, there's just something in me that, you know, I want to look into this, that kind of feeling, you know. Because I was, you know, doing a lot of things. And it was, for me, learning new things was really making me sane. Like, all right, so I need to understand more, going deeper. That's really me.
Mm.
So I started reading about white papers.
Mm.
So being technical and then going back to what I usually am, going to the basics, like I don't understand a thing initially. So I was like, I should understand this. There is a way to understand. I have to make it as easy as possible for me to understand. I mean, I structured it in a way that's comparable to construction.
Mm.
That's what I did.
Makes sense.
Like in engineering, what we do is like you have all of these complex computation, but at the very bottom is just like understanding that there's force and there's area, and that's it. Just have to make sure that that doesn't break.
Got
right.
It.
So same thing for blockchain. I try to understand why it's immutable. Why is it good? What good is it gonna be for me in my industry in construction and in whatever I do. And slowly it sparked something in me. And that was the time during the pandemic where I was raising my daughter and the family, of course. Mm-hmm. Now I then realized that I had to be more present at home, right? Because when you do construction, most of the time you're not here.
With the hard hat on.
Yeah. So like 7 days a week, you're out there.
Wow.
Because construction usually 6 days a week.
Yep.
It's until Saturday. And your Sunday is a time wherein you go around, mingle with other people, understand what they're doing, and go back again, report, or even visit them, join them, or meet with them, dine with them, and so on. So
it was
really 7 days a week for construction. So I had to be more present at home. So then I decided, you know, with my friends we were gaming. Like we were talking about those things. I sparked the conversation. You guys know about Bitcoin, you guys know about this and that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, slowly we were discussing more deeper every time we play. Like every time we play, it's going to be like, do you think it's going to go up? Going to go down? Those kind of things. You know, do you think this new iteration of blockchain would be better than the previous one or the older ones? And so on. It's just like sharing information and it was really exciting for me. So during that time, I was doing trades because I had to, like construction was not really doing that well because what you're doing is management consultancy. Right. And if projects are facing problems, like
you go down because with the
banks, because banks are not able to provide
loans,
right? Because they had to make sure that they stay afloat. So you're the first guys to be out because you're not needed in construction anyways. You're not going to manage a lot of people anyway. So you can let go of some consultants and that would be us, right? Managing them because they can manage it anyways.
Correct.
It's just that you're more specialized than them, but same thing, you can manage it.
Wow.
So during that time, I was really trading, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it all started. I mean, I realized that, you know, maybe we should use this platform, the transparency features, immutability in some good ways. And I tried to understand different networks. I was not into NFTs, to be honest. In fact, there is a sad story with NFT that I don't want to mention also, that I bought and now it's flying. I bought it. Okay. I sold it very, very early.
Okay.
Lang, halos mag-double lang. I sold it.
Okay.
It's a very small amount at the time. And okay. I didn't know that it would 1,000x.
Oh
like
my
that.
God.
So 10x or even more, 100x pa nga ta, the peak.
Oh my God.
So it was a sad story, but you know, I didn't really dug deep into NFTs because I was really a guy for infrastructure.
Yep. That's in your nature.
Being an engineer. Yeah. So I really dug deep into that and understood that there are a lot of areas to cover and that there are a lot of iterations that has to be done in order for it to be tailor fitted to a certain industry. Mm. And at that time I was talking about, you know, having the possibility of having a private and public blockchain, which Paul Soliman is doing now. Yeah. So those were the iterations back then. I see that's lacking, this is lacking, that's lacking.
Yep.
And then that's when everything started, you know.
All right.
Well, it was not just me, it was also the group. So
got it.
We decided, all right, are you ready to do this? We all had our own businesses, by the way. And most of us really dropped it. Like, all right, let's do this.
Where are
like
these people that you were talking about? Are these your high school friends or are these their
no.
They're crypto friends.
They're the gaming friends.
Gaming friends. That's amazing. But okay, last question before we take our last break. Why go all in? I know in the pandemic, you needed to be home. I understood now why you had to go. But that's a scary shit, especially if somebody's thriving somewhere and you go all in on uncharted territories, on uncharted waters. That's scary. And how did you then decide, all right, let's all jump in together?
At that time, I had a lot of contingencies. At that time.
Nice.
I was like,
startup life is very famous from removing contingencies in your life.
Yes. And I would say that it was, you know, you can never be prepared in any circumstance, especially if you're handling or you're doing tech.
Nope. It's
if
fucked
doing
up, man.
it is
fucked up.
That's true. So good thing is that we have a tech guy with us.
Mm.
We had a lawyer with us. Mm. We had somebody who's good in marketing. So it was, in a way, it streamlined. We had people doing trading already.
Nice.
That's their profession. And somebody was really bringing in investors also. So it's like a complete team in a way because we were all playing and it was really just like some of us really did drop our full-time jobs and even our businesses. Mm-hmm. Some did not. Some still did it. Because they need
hedged.
To. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for me, I was thinking at the time that I was really prepared. You know, like, I have 4 contingencies and this is going to go well anyway. So I was all positive. You have to be like, if you're starting something, you have to be really positive because it's going to burn you out. Mm-hmm. Like your positivity would be 100 and after a year, it's going to be 50%, something like that. So you have to stay as positive as you can be every time.
You have to be irrationally optimistic.
Sometimes. Yeah, I call it now, after watching the series, constant optimism.
Yep.
Like you have to have that constant optimism. It shouldn't be that high. At the same time, it shouldn't be negative so that we can carry on every day.
Yep, absolutely. Especially if you are the founder and CEO. All right, now let's take our last break. And when we come back, we'll now talk about VTI and what are the things, why did they go dev shop model? What are the products that are building? And again, the punches that they got, because it ain't easy. If you think construction is hard, bruh, startups is hella hard. We'll talk about that more after. Hey, hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter
Water has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers. I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named Fintech of the Year at last year's Philippine Fintech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. For the break. And we're back from the break. We are still with Emma Navalano. Then didn't know what that there was a big boulder that is going to be dropping into him. So Viridian, obviously, it's I'm just looking at the LinkedIn. This is a dev shop, right? VTI. You created a dev shop to build blockchain products. Walk me through how you built the team, and then what's the goal? Where are you going to be? A service business, because we've talked to so many service business founders here. Just recently, again, Paul, Soliman, Arup Maiti. I had a dev shop before, and it's one of the most fucked up cash business because there's no cash. Everything's stuck on AR in accounts receivable because nobody pays on time. But walk me through the thought process here. Why go dev shop first? Was that something you really wanted to do to keep things afloat and build products, or you just really wanted to build blockchain for people?
So initially, you have to start with the lean team. So the main focus of that of VTI is we need to develop blockchain solutions, and that's Tetrix, the ecosystem there. And inside Tetrix, initially it was really a layer zero network. It was really a public-private thing, and that would communicate to different networks because that's the one that's missing. And after we were able to initially do our research and our white paper, layer zero came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, there's a group doing the same thing.
Holy shit. Okay.
And funny thing is, we realized at that point that it's going to take us so much resources to build it. And at the end of the day, this is very important. Most people don't realize this. You have to actually understand where you're going to position yourself, because understanding that makes you realize that you need to pivot a bit, change your business model a bit. Because if there are tons of networks out there saying that they're better, faster, and so on and so forth, right? At the end of the day, who's going to use you?
None. Because there's too many alternatives. And you need to find your niche. And again, pick your own battles. And when you pick your own battles, guys, you want to pick your own battles that you have a good chance of winning, not just another participant, right? And is that what you guys did? So did you pivot the initial version of Tetrix because layer zero is there? And how did you then carve yourself a niche that you won't go head to head with a potential giant?
Yeah, well, it's still there though. Our model's still there, but we had to change it a bit wherein we need to create solutions that would be used by people, and Tetrix Network would be the one handling it some amount of years.
Okay.
Now, because you still need it. Because the solution of layer zero doesn't really work for all networks. Again, there are flaws. Yep. And you're trying to target a different set of group. Our niche is really enterprise. Looking for enterprise. But it's really B2B2C, something like that. Like, we enable businesses by providing them tools so they could offer that to their customers. So it's like just providing you tools. And if every time you use our system, our platform, right, you earn from it. And the data that's needed to be minted into the blockchain is going to be under the network if it really grows, expands. So at the time, we were looking into, you know, how do we start? Like, what solution is really needed by Filipinos? Then realized and came to a conclusion that everybody needs a digital version of their wallet, their physical ones. Like, that was the ideology. Mm-hmm. How you use it, like how you use it now. Mm-hmm. Go out, go to a store, open up your wallet, pay, that's it. If you need your IDs there, there's a placeholder for IDs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you can have your photos there. So it was really pointing to one solution, specific solution, which is providing your self-custodial wallet.
Got it.
That would enable you to control different transactions. May it be sending money, receiving money, putting it somewhere, or sharing your ID, sharing your information, like to whoever person, because it's the same thing that we want to mimic in a digital version.
Got it.
So that's our iteration. And while doing that, we realized that there are a lot of missing pieces again. And we saw that this is something that's big. The Tetrix link, wherein you want all of your IDs and data there. It's not just NFTs, because NFTs could be data, I would say, yes. It could be photos. It could be something else. But what if it's Web2, which is not blockchain, and you want it there inside the wallet? So you have to have something that in a way mimics that.
Gotcha.
That's still self-custodial.
Right. Makes sense.
Now, right? So you have the 2.5. Yeah.
I want to understand. So yeah, Web 2.5, somewhere in between Web 2 as we know it now, and then obviously Web 3. But I want to understand the type of demand. Because again, there's this, the dev shop side of it, and there's the product. It's hard to do both. Okay. Because first of all, you're not the only game in town. There's a lot of people. Yes. And then you have to get people to on board, I'm not sure how fast they are in paying. Maybe they pay in crypto, whatever that is, and whatnot. But how did you then create the demand for this? Or even If there was demand, how did you get the clientele to get this done? Because it's a juggling act, creating products and building dev shops. There's only a select few that I've been able to see that were able to do it right. Even the ones that have been trying to do this for the longest time, like for example, Simph from Albert and Dave Overton, struggled a lot mightily because they started out as a dev shop where technically all they wanted to do is build products. And they almost died several times. Until now, they pretty much shit product on product on product. But it took years, over a decade even, to get that, that mix right. How did you guys do that from service, building shit for other people, and then also building the Tetrix ecosystem and also making money off of that?
So what we did is, we know that this is going to take time, development of Tetrix and all the services under it. It's going to take time. So what we did is we took in work or projects that are related to it. So that we would not be, you know, just creating a solution that we are not going to use ourselves.
Got it.
So that's what we focused on, those types of projects, projects that are in the Web3 space, projects that are Web 2.5, projects that has something to do with data, projects that would somehow use our Pitaka, our self-custodial wallet, and so on and so forth. So that's what we're trying to do again and again. So
how did you get those projects? Because, I mean, again, being not, I've always been openly honest with this. I am not a Web3 person. I understand at the end of the day, you're going to go back and it's the same hustle anyway, right? I don't care what the fuck you're doing, but you're going to have to hustle. So that's a common denominator across everyone that I've interviewed here. And I can relate. But where do you even get these projects that are Web3 related? Because they're not out there in the open. I need an app. Right? So you're going to have to be specialized in how you identify those types of work.
I guess I would say since they've been hearing about us, so
word of mouth.
There had been opportunities when we were able to sit down with different people, talk about our projects, and then realize that we can work together, and then ended up, you know, what if you can do this? What if you can do that with us, and so on. So that was just how it happened. Like we had to be there, out there, showcasing what we're trying to do, and you know, it just came in. I think it's mutually beneficial for both, for all our clients and friends. Yeah.
But in the world of Web3, do they still have the old problem of not paying on time? Or is it also through crypto?
It's a mix of both. Like you'll have because you're all trying to survive in a way during the bear market, right? So it's like it's really hard, but with proper communication, you can really bridge that gap, right?
So just hard during payroll though.
So it's been a problem for all, and I'm gonna say all, because you've been seeing left and right projects that are laying off 30% of their employees, 70% max. Yep. I even know a lot of projects that are now gone, that are bigger than us. So it's just like being prepared. No one is, even us. Like, we're not prepared for that. Talking about contingencies, right?
So what happened to your four contingencies?
Well, one is also a fail, which is a big hit, sana, because it's in the fintech industry, but it didn't do well. I had a lot of my contingencies placed there. Aside from that, I do tradings, and that
you're in control. But there are things that you can't control there too.
Where I also became a bit greedy, and I lost a huge amount of money well. So I gained a lot. Yes, I lost a lot.
Yep.
Something like that. So it was a constant up and downs. And I would say right now, my contingency only is really for the family.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, prioritizing what you really want. Like at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Right. So is it really just for you, just to feed into your passion, or I would say internal ego? I call my passion internal ego. So it's like I'm fueling myself. Like, I'm not going to showcase that, but it's really just fueling myself that I am needed somewhere. Right? So it's really my internal ego.
Got it. So, what's the thing that about startup life, Emin, that you didn't see coming? Because of course you've already been, I mean, well documented in your experiences just in the construction alone. And a lot of things I think that in your construction life, in your engineering life, applies here. Being able to be adaptable, hustling, discipline, being idealistic, that carries on. But there are some things about tech and Web3 that's unique to it. That's just fucking, you can't prepare for. What were those things? And what did you learn?
I would say it's about being prepared financially.
Yeah.
Like tech really evolves in a few months.
Yep.
If you're not there at the right time, and you're not creating solutions at the right time, you'll be basically wasting money. And aside from that, for startups, it's really pitching. I mean, if you're doing construction, you just go out there. Oh, this is my experience. Oh, all right, I'll get you, because construction, it's booming at the time, right? Build, and all of that. So it's easier because you just have to show that this is what you do, this is what you're capable of doing, and people will get you because there's demand, right? Mm-hmm. But in the tech industry, it's really your solution that has to be in demand. It's not you, it's your solution.
Correct.
Right? So you have to pitch that. Like, it's actually needed, but people don't just understand the technology. People understand it as a scam. People understand it as crypto. People understand it as NFTs, which has a bad reputation already because of people losing money.
Correct.
Because they're not educated. Mm. Same as me. I lost money even if I was educated because I was greedy.
Right.
Right. So it was really, I would say, that pitching, the whole pitching thing, and, you know, pivoting while you're pitching, like, this is a new thing. This is something that I must do in order for me to be relevant, because the tech really changes after a few months. Right. And it's not the same for construction, not that much. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why until now they still use same equipments, right? Same construction methodologies. Materials changes, yes. But there's this standard already. So in emerging technology, there's no standard.
You have to figure it out.
You're creating your own. You have to figure it out. So those are the things that are really hard for any startup. You want to create a solution for this. It's not actually your technology that you're selling, right? It's really the solution. It's like, if this solution is meant for enterprises, what problem is it solving?
Correct.
You also have to understand their pain points at a level wherein you're actually doing it. For example, if you're creating solutions for edutech, for education, you're creating edutech solutions, you have to be really like a teacher, understanding, you know, what are the pain points of day-to-day teachers and so on. So in our case, in blockchain, it's the same thing, right? You must understand that specific sector or niche you're trying to solve. So in our case, we were really into like how to make it easier for people to hold their assets or hold their data and be in control of that most of the time, because our data is out there.
Correct.
So we wanted to actually help people to monitor the use of that data, and at the same time allow you to dispute every time that it's being misused. So that's what people don't understand yet, because they're looking at it like, pitaka, is this pitaka? No, it's more than that. Like, pitaka is front-facing. It's a tool that's needed to do that.
That takes a journey to do that. But walk me through real quick before we wrap this baby up. What are the products now? Let's talk about the product side. So obviously you have the Tetrix network. That's a technically, if you just simplify it, it's an API for connecting Web3 to Web3. A little bit, is it correct? It's like an API connecting Web3 to
Web3. It's almost.
Right? Almost, yeah. Again. I'm just using jargon. I mean, basic jargon. It functions almost the same, but technically, it's like that a little bit.
Because,
like,
yeah.
If you want a deep dive, talk to Eman. Okay? Not me.
No, there are a lot of people guy. There to talk to us.
Right. And I'm not ever going to pretend like I am, right? There are legit Web3 guys here, and Emin's one of them. So again, talk to him if you want to talk. That's a totally different rabbit hole I'm not willing to go down on.
I'm not even an expert also.
Yeah.
We're all learning.
I'm all on, at the hustle level only. Okay, that's the common denominator. But yeah, Evan, before we wrap this baby up, what are the products that you technically are building, and what's next for you guys in Tetrix and Viridian, and you know, what you guys are building up?
So right now, after we created our first wallet that allows you to approve different kinds of transactions, that's a vital component. We are now integrating data into the system wherein you would actually approve every time you use specific data, or I would say, for simpler terms, you know, ID certificates or whatnot, right? And we are actually creating solutions right now for people to not line up when they renew their documents, IDs, or even fetch their documents and IDs. Mm-hmm. Because this has been a problem ever since, not just in our system with the government, but really in our day-to-day lives, in the private, in our schools. You go back to the schools. Right?
Yep.
If you go, you want to get your diploma, you want to get this and get that, you have to go to the school, line up. What if you're an OFW? That's a problem. And you have to fly in, red ribbon, and so on and so forth. So we wanted to, in a way, create, we're actually creating a solution on that. Authenticating documents to make sure that you get the right documents from the right sources. And that's verified so that you wouldn't need to line up and pay so much just to get it.
All right. Sounds good. And again, thank you very much, Eman. Super excited for you guys. And again, I'm pretty sure this is not going to be the last time we're going to be talking. We'll see you after a few more battling years in startup life. Hate to say it, but again, it's I love it when people just come through and trudge on, because it's not easy. I don't care how you think. I mean, a lot of people really come through here and say, I was thriving in my old shit. This should be easy. Dude, this is like going
back,
into, you know, it's like going to the Hunger Games, man. You go to the Hunger Games and everybody fucking is dead. Only Katniss survives. You have to be Katniss, right?
Yes.
It's really fucked up. But again, I'm happy for you guys and super excited for what you guys are building. But invite people over. Where do they check this out? Whatever you do. And again, if they want to jump into the rabbit hole with you, where do they go and how do they do that?
So yeah, if you want to reach out to us and learn more about us, you can go to tetrix.xyz or visit our Facebook page and reach out to us through our email if you want to. We're actually hiring right now if you're a developer in blockchain space and are looking to work into solutions like ours, just email us. And I'd like to take this opportunity also to invite people. My other hat being also part of the Blockchain Council of the Philippines, because we have recently conducted the meeting and we wanted to invite members now to join.
Who's in the council?
The council. It's actually led by Sir Donald Lim.
Okay, shout
and,
out.
And so we have.
By the way, if you want to
Henry Aguda,
if you want to check out Donald Lim's origin story, I've had him way, way, way back in the show. Just check it out. He sold stuff in Burger King. Okay, oh, there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy.
Henry Aguda of Union Digital Bank.
Yes, we also have John from Gcash. We also have Marco Rosetta. Yeah, we also have Gail from DynaQuest, Cherie from Scarlet Box. We also have Paul Soliman.
Shout out.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and we also have Noel from Impero Group that's located in AFAB doing all of those free zone licensing for cryptocurrencies. Mm. By the way, it's also enacted by law. So you can now do that. Most people don't understand it yet, but it's a good way for us to legalize our businesses in Web3. We also have a lot of other people, like 15 people there. We have Lito Villanueva also.
Oh, wow. RCBC
Alliance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also have, mention a few, there are a lot. Cheska Gonzalez.
Yep.
And
I've had her on the show. I've had Lito on the show again. So, again, these are legit people. So, I've had them on the show, that means they legit. Again, Eman, thank you so much. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast app. if you see a 5-star, give us a 5-star again. Let us know if this is even something that you like and that feedback matters. And again, it's going to be in the show notes if we did say some jargon, show notes on hustleshare.com. And guys, we have a new show coming up. If you need to freaking know about a deep dive about how to become a founder, a better leader, a better decision maker, we have a brand new podcast called Founders Only, or Hustle Share Presents Founders Only. So look it up. We're also going to put that in the description box of this podcast. It's also going to be a YouTube podcast, by the way. So you now get to see my ugly ass face as we talk to founders and discuss their journeys. Again, thank you so much, Amin.
Yeah, a pleasure. Pleasure to be here, Ron.
Appreciate it. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.